They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, live from the Moya Crescent Memorial Podcast Studio, welcome to issue 84 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that has its own awards ceremony. This is the first annual Behind the Panels Awards. For your host, Richard Gray.
Thank you. And welcome, one and all, to the first annual Behind the Panels Awards. Thank you. I am so honoured to be hosting you tonight with my colleagues David McVeigh and Dave Longo joining me here in the house. Look at this crowd though, everyone's here. Look at this, I got Jack Nicholson grinning at me from the front row. I feel like a Laker girl. Sorry, Billy Crystal. Thank you. We're here today to honour the biggest and brightest stars that the comic book industry has to offer. The best books, the finest creators, the writers and artists in the industry. You know, all the people that DC has fired over the last 2 years. But seriously, there's no negativity here tonight. Well, mostly none. This is about our favourites for the year. Not an objective best of list. These are the ones we dug because we are just, after all, a bunch of fans who like reading comic books and other stuff. So without any further ado, here is Mr. David McVeigh to present our favourite writer for 2013.
Thank you. Writing has been around since at least the 6th millennium BC, but some of these people have been doing some writing even more recently than that. In fact, because this is a 2013 show, their stuff has been published in the last 12 months, and the nominees are Mark Waid for Daredevil and Indestructible Hulk, Matt Fraction, Hawkeye, Satellite Sam, Sex Criminals, Steve Horton, Amala's Blade, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Avengers Assemble, Captain Marvel, Pretty Deadly, Gail Simone, Batgirl, Brian K. Vaughan, Saga, The Private Eye, Scott Snyder, American Vampire, The Wake, Batman. And the winner is Brian K. Vaughan.
And now presenting the award for favourite artists, it's me again. The Oxford English Dictionary defines an artist as a person who creates paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. Over the course of the last year, these talented men and women have drawn things and we looked at them, unless they were covered in word balloons. And the nominees are Francesco Francavio, Guardians of the Galaxy, Afterlife with Archie and the Black Beetle, Jeff Darrow for Shaolin Cowboy, Frank Quitely, Jupiter's Legacy, Andrea Sorrentino, Green Arrow, Chris Somney, Daredevil, Emma Rios, Pretty Deadly, Sean Murphy, The Wake, J.H. Williams III, Sandman Overture, Riley Rosmo, Dia de los Muertos, Bedlam and Drumheller, Fiona Staples, Saga, Nicola Scott, Earth 2, Charlie Adlard, The Walking Dead, and Esad Ribic, Thor. And the winner is
Esad Ribic.
Accepting the award on behalf of Esad is Dave Longo. Dave, Why is SR the winner?
The combination of like pencil coloring and amazing art itself is what makes this the winning artist of the year.
And they were all great artists this year. You're all winners. You're all winners. There are no losers.
I'm going to let you finish. I just want to say Nicholas Scott's art.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Was very good. But I'm going to let you finish, all right?
Fiona Staples was the best artist of the year.
Excellent, excellent artists this year. They were all fantastic. In fact, look, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, when you've got someone like Frank Whiteley in the list, it's really hard to choose anybody else. Or Jeff Darrow does amazing stuff. And I think, you know, Somni and Murphy and Rosmo have been consistently delivering. And Scott, Nicholas Scott's been consistently delivering.
I think we can honestly say that this is an award that could be shared between any and all of these artists.
Let's be controversial. Let's just break up the award between all those people.
Why not?
Yeah. Let's do it.
We'll just chop up the statue.
What do you reckon about that, people? Wonderful. Wonderful.
The audience agrees, guys.
Well, Dave, it's time for you to take the stage again and tell us about this year's newest releases.
Every year, dozens of new titles hit the shelves. Some last for years. Others only a handful of issues where, looking at you, Justice League of America's vibe, some grab us instantly. Some of the top debuts this year have been The Private Eye, The Wake, East of West, Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy, Sex, Satellite Sam, Velvet, A Voice in the Dark, and Five Ghosts. And also four. And the winner is...
The Private Eye, Panel Syndicate by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin.
Wow, Brian K. Vaughan is the popular horse in this race today, isn't
he?
Yes,
David, this is Brian's second award for the year.
This is one of those award shows where the favourite never wins.
Brian K. Vaughan has never been previously nominated.
This is the best award show I've ever been to. David, you're going to take the stage again now and tell us about the best limited or continuing series.
You're letting me back on the stage again?
No, okay. That David, oh, okay. Not that one.
There's also those ongoing favorites that keep coming out month after month. The ones we can't wait to revisit. You know, the ones where I say, oh, it's on my iPad. I just haven't caught up with it yet. These are our nominees for favorite limited or continuing series. Miniature Jesus, Amala's Blade, Daredevil, Hawkeye, Batgirl, Batman, Saga, Batman Black and White, Fatal, and Thor. And the winner is...
Hawkeye.
Hey!
I mean, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye. Look, consistently good book.
Absolutely.
This is the book, if you listen to the last episode of Behind the Panels, you will know that we were talking about books that have taken old characters and, you know, just played with them and made them either fun or interesting and engaging in some way.
This book is never stops surprising you.
No.
You sit there and you read it and you just go, just when you think that you've got it figured out, they just take it off in a different direction again.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's hard to compare it to some of the other books that are on this list. I mean, I love, love, love Amala's Blade. I know you guys haven't caught up with that yet, and we will be doing it as a pick next year. It's fun as hell.
Oh, I absolutely adore Batgirl.
And it's only a limited series. Batgirl's wonderful. Batman is mostly great. I mean, Saga, we all agree, it's one of the best books on there.
Saga got robbed here, I think.
Saga. Brian K. Vaughan's done well tonight. So I think spread the love, man. Spread the love. But speaking of spreading the love, Australians make comics too. And now coming to the stage to present the best Australian comic of the year is me. If you haven't noticed already, 2/3 of our hosts sound Australian. That's because we are. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Oi. The Australian comic scene has grown rapidly in the past few years, and we've had the honour of meeting and even befriending a number of local creators. Hi. While there are too many Australian releases to list, here's a few of the ones we liked. An Anzac Tale, Dart and Dill, The Showbag Years, The Deep, Volume 2, on a technicality, Homebrew Vampire Bullets, Volume 1, Neomad, Squirtstone, Winter City 5 through 7, and Grubby Little Smudges of Filth. And the winner of the first Australian Best Panels Award of the Year is... The Deep, Volume 2, on a technicality. The Deep is one of those ones we loved. We did the book a while back. We invited Ryan Huff from Beauty and the Geek and Geek of Oz onto the show, discussed the book with us. We've since met Tom Taylor, such a great guy.
So friendly,
very hyperkinetic. He might be turning up later in the show a little bit. But look, the Deep actually hit stores late last year, but it was officially launched this year, and it's hard to compare anything else really that came out. But those books I mentioned, this is a very short selection of Australian releases this year. If you go to the Ledger Awards website, and there'll be a link in our show notes, go there to see that there's a sheer number of Australian releases that came out this year. Some of them are reprints, some of them are new high-quality books. Really, I think, guys, if you're Australian and you read comics, get out there and start supporting this stuff, because, you know, if it's someone like Tom Taylor, he's literally the next big thing at DC.
He is now.
He is, yeah. I mean, that's literally the case of where Australian talent goes. Mm. So go and support these guys, because one of them might be you, and then you might end up getting that dream gig one day.
And then you'll come on our show.
And then maybe
we'll give you an award.
Well, because we've got this conversational turn going here, it's time for a little musical interlude before we come back for the slightly different second half of the show.
Alan Moore, Hitler and God, though their friendship may seem odd, one made space-time, one hates Jews, and one wrote some comics that got reasonable reviews. Though their friendship may seem weird, all have moustaches and two have beard. One's a Nazi and one made hell, and Hitler and God probably did something as well.
I'm not even sure, like, you may not even hear that song by the time this hits through.
Oh, no, you'll hear it. Wow. He may have actually topped himself.
I actually think that is real. As far as I can tell, like, every source that I found that on, this was like...
For those of you who are wondering, yes, that's Alan Moore.
That's Alan Moore. Hearing, yeah. As far as I can tell, that's attributed to Alan Moore. It's parody, people. But man.
Yeah. I like to imagine that was just recorded while he was in the shower.
Yeah.
Making his tea in the morning.
Sitting on the toilet, having a poo, just humming away to himself.
Fishing outside his house.
Guys, this is the second half of the show. It's going to be a little bit more like your regular show. We're just going to have a chit-chat about a few of the last categories we've got on the list here. So we're going to be a bit more conversational rather than doing our...
Than our meta.
You mean I... have to stop talking like this.
We have to do it.
Yes.
We were going to do the joke. The Native American accepts an award, right?
The greatest...
They love me. They really love me.
But I've got the greatest soundboard happening over here. But we're going to talk about the biggest turnaround for 2013, both positive and negative, because a lot of books we read, and we try and read stuff every week when it comes out, but some books are worth sticking with. Other books... aren't, but then we suddenly come back to them and we think, my God, what's happened? This is now the greatest book that's ever made.
And we're comic book nerds, so we just read them anyway.
Anyway, yeah, but sometimes they we stick with them. Now, look, I think I speak for everyone when I say we were all disappointed with the direction that Age of Ultron took. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about that at length on
that's
the show.
That's a mild understatement, I think.
We did a whole show on it, didn't we?
Yeah, we pretty much did.
But for me, the biggest turnaround in a positive way, just to keep this light and give some niceness to the DC people, is Green Arrow.
Because I think DC's actually got two on this list I want to talk about. Yeah, so Green Arrow is definitely one of them.
Green Arrow is at the start of the year, issue 16, all the way up to that, and Nocenti's run and the J.T. Kroll run before that. I think there was a third writer in there as well at one point. Just terrible. Mm. Just a terrible book. If I was not a Green Arrow fan, I would not have been collecting them. It was purely just because I buy anything that's got Green Arrow on the cover. Jeff Lemire, Andrea Sorrentino, both nominees tonight, turned that book and made it into something amazing, an art-driven, story-driven piece of DC wonderment that doesn't compare with anything else in the New 52, because it is just this amazing little pocket thing. Unfortunately, it is starting to become more like the TV show, which is... The TV show is wonderful, and we'll talk about that more later, but I'm not sure that... It's right for the book.
Yeah.
Because they've just introduced Diggle into the book, and I'm not quite sure the synchronicity is going to work.
Especially considering that in our interview with Jeff Lemire, he said that they weren't related to each other.
Yeah, but you knew. It's now Arrow's hot property for the studio. Suddenly Green Arrow's hot property.
So he's hotter than a lot of their other titles. I think the other DC title we really need to talk about, though, is Earth 2, which was starting to flail, quite frankly. I mean, it started off as a beautifully drawn, mediocre book.
Yeah.
But its artwork was what was carrying it through.
Yeah.
But its story was just floundering. Mm. And just recently, Tom Taylor has taken over. And in that one first issue, and now the second issue that he's taken over from, it's an immediate turnaround. A giant U-turn.
I really like James Robinson. I liked where he built, because where he left the book was pretty full on. Like, he left it with Superman being revealed as one of the big bads, but where Tom Taylor's taken that since, it's like there's been, I think I actually said in a review not too long ago, it was either for Newsarama or for our site, that's behind the panels, don't it? that there are more gasps per square inch in that book.
Well, it's also there's a hyperkinetic energy to it. Yeah, now. It's like as soon as you open the page, it's like, oh, this is different.
I mean, not too many spoilers on this, but the last issue had the final fate of a few characters. You know. The new Batman killed a guy, you know, and we don't know who the new Batman is. And the guy he killed was a famous Batman.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by that moment.
And it was because that person was still in stasis. You know, it wasn't even
couldn't even fight back.
It was completely cold blooded. But they also have things like, because Superman is the bad guy, they have Lois Lane as Red Tornado.
Mm.
They have all these things. It's what the new 52 should have been in a way.
Well, and it's Earth 2. It is literally taking that concept and saying, it's not what you think it is.
You want.
Yeah,
you
know,
it is a massive sandbox.
And it's exactly, that's something that Tom exceeds at.
Yes, with Injustice.
Excels at, rather.
Yeah.
Not exceeds.
Excels at.
He can exceed it if he wants to, but he excels at it mostly. Yeah, because Injustice, exactly, was his first big sandbox.
Mm.
And obviously they liked what he did there, so they gave him another big sandbox. Now he's got two sandboxes.
Yeah.
Or is that Sandbox High? another DC book we have to talk about, Dave, is Batman. For you, this has not taken an upward turn.
No, because I really just like Year Zero. I don't know how you guys feel about
it's
Year Zero.
It's gone on far too long.
I liked Year Zero a lot. And when they finished...
It's barely halfway through.
Well, I know, but the thing is, when they finished the Red Hood storyline...
That was it.
Year Zero was over for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? We're still going? You know? I agree with you. I think it's... This is a book that, up until this time, we would have said could do no wrong.
We probably would have awarded it, like, right now. Like, Batman as the best run of the year.
It's very possible, yeah.
If Death of the Family continued the way it was going.
Well, it's the core. It's the Night of the Owls. Yeah. It's Death in the Family. This has been a stellar run for Batman. An unbelievable run for Batman. We've hit their first stumbling block. And I guess every book is allowed to do that, you know? Yeah. So I just think that they need to wrap up Zero
Year. I think,
but you know it's not. It's apparently heading into a nuclear wasteland Gotham with, like, the Batmobile.
This is Gothopia now, yeah?
No, that's separate.
Separate? Oh, God, another one.
Don't you know where Year Zero is heading, Dave?
No, I haven't looked at spoilers on this. So.
Year Zero is heading into year 0.5, isn't it?
Should we discuss where it goes?
Isn't it going to, like, 6 months later?
Oh, I have heard this. Yes.
The Riddlers are supposedly going to nuke Gotham City, and it's going to take place in a post-apocalyptic Gotham City.
But how does that
work? The Batmobile... I don't know.
Because...
This is what Scott Snyder said on Batman on Batman.
We know Gotham wasn't nuked.
Yeah.
Because it hadn't been nuked in Death of the Family.
Yeah.
So how's that going to work?
This is the thing.
Okay.
We're staying positive here.
This is a positive night.
This is precisely why that this award's nominated for the negative downturn.
We should also talk about it was a positive and a negative, which was Trinity War.
You see, look, and you and I have different opinions on the ending of this, because on the series generally, I actually enjoyed it immensely the whole way through, and my major problem with it was the ending begat Forever Evil. Which has not been a very satisfying event, because all that promise that Trinity War was going to give by its very name, it was the Trinity War, all that stuff that we've been hinted at since the start of the New 52, none of it paid off.
No, and that's why it was a downward turn for me.
But it was a hell of a ride.
That's why I say it's a positive and a negative, because Trinity War was an incredible ride
that
has a really sudden and abrupt end that led to Forever Evil, which kind of leads us into this next category.
Yeah.
Which is what are our least favorite and favorite trends.
Just quickly, Dave, you wanted to quickly mention Fantastic Four and FF. It's a bit of a downturn.
Oh, yeah, because Matt Fraction, when he left it, it went downhill. Matt Fraction had built this Fantastic Four that reminded you of the Fantastic Four we love. You know, the focus on scientific exploration and like high adventure and you know, travels between space and time, using the family as a family unit.
It sounds like the Gummy Bears.
Yeah, it kind of is. Like the Care Bears, you know? Yeah, with science.
High adventure beyond compare.
Yeah, but like making Mr. Fantastic, that Carl Sagan kind of character, you know. But when he dropped off of it, it's just turned into garbage.
There has been talk, and it's really canceled, isn't it?
Well, it is canceled. It's a really big disappointment too, because the story arc that he built is probably going to not be resolved.
And you were a big fan of FF when it first started.
I was, and part of that was Michael Red's art. I really, really love. I'll buy anything with his art in it. I've got a whole run of iZombie, but. Man, okay, that was a book that had potential as well, but unfortunately they were balanced. They were finely balanced books, and I didn't. I think you had to be reading both to get the most out of them.
Yeah, they were basically part one and two every month. Yeah.
And I didn't. If you weren't satisfied with one, it kind of detracted from the other. I felt.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, Dave, as you were saying, events of the year. I mean, this has been a big event year. And I'll just do a quick list of some of the stuff that came out, which was Age of Ultron. Sorry, Dave.
Infinity! No, I did that on purpose, sorry.
Battle of
the Atom!
Thank you.
Hunger.
Cataclysm, Trinity War, Hell on Earth, Throne of Atlantis, Requiem for Damien's dream. That was Damien's death, basically. Wrath of the First Lantern, Lights Out, Cywar, which was a Superman-Superboy crossover, Forever Evil, which we've mentioned, The Unwritten Fables, which was a Vertigo crossover between The Unwritten and Fables, The Enemy Within, which was the Avengers Assemble Captain Marvel crossover, and Extermination, which was three X-Men books we didn't care about and have all been cancelled.
You know, what's really interesting is I completely forgot about Throne of Atlantis. Yes.
I had to look up a few of these ones. Look, I'm going to throw my
vote. What was Infinity again?
I still have no idea. I'm going to throw my hat in, or my ring in even, and say that one of my favourites of those is The Wrath of the First Lantern / Lights Out. This was the last event of the Geoff Johns Green Lantern era and the first event of the Roberto Venditti Green Lantern era. And God, we all loved the final Green Lantern when it came out. Issue 20 of Green Lantern was phenomenal. And the stuff leading up to that was epic stuff. And you could almost say that, you know, Geoff Johns' Green Lantern arc started back with Rebirth and has been one continuous arc all the way up until The Wrath of the First Lantern. And that was just a magnificent conclusion in that bumper-sized issue where he laid out the entire future of the Green Lantern Corps, and basically did that thing that Bendis always said he'd do with Ultimate Spider-Man, which was, oh yeah, my final issue, I'm going to rip his arms and legs off and hand to the next writer and say, you deal with it, you know.
Which is basically what Geoff Johns did.
But I think Robert Venditti's done an amazing job with the first arc out, Lights Out. It is a good, epic Green Lantern story. The only other thing that comes close to me in terms of big events in the last year is, of course, is The Enemy Within, which
was actually probably my favorite event of the year, because I just thought it was, out of all the events this year, I actually thought it was the most consistent. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it was done. You know what I mean? And it was like, wow, that was fun.
And I think because the two titles that were involved were both written by Kelly Sir.
Yeah, she controlled it, and it was within her little corner of the sandbox, so to speak, and she did it, and it was done. You know,
and there was a single. We actually spoke to her about it at the start. She said, you know, anything that needs a checklist is, you know.
Exactly.
But she said at the end of the day, you know, she told the story she wanted to tell.
I love the fact that this is a summer night recording. We've got the crickets in the background.
Yeah, we've got all the windows open in here because...
it's been hot, people.
It's been very hot. Yeah, no, we couldn't cool it down.
I got to say, from that list, I'm going to pick Trinity War. Because I hated the ending like you. But up to that point,
it was an amazing, really good. Yeah. I was hooked. I was and in fact, I was saying to you guys before the show, if you go and look up Trinity War in Wikipedia, my name's all the way through it for my Newsarama reviews. And I look back and I was fairly positive to almost every issue in there, except for the final one.
The Butler did it.
The Butler did it.
The Butler did it, and then Forever Evil, which kind of killed it. You know, it just took the entire... It just deflated everything that it was. And that's what really annoyed me about it.
Yeah.
Especially considering it had 2 years of build-up to this.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing. And I think it was 2 years of build-up that didn't pay off to where we wanted to pay off, which is, you know, not unusual. If they gave us everything we wanted, we wouldn't come back.
But man, the elements were there.
But they were there.
The elements were there to have something amazing
to
happen.
Find out now, halfway through Forever Evil, they were all sucked into Firestorm's head. I feel a little cheated, you know? Yeah. But which sort of kind of brings us nicely into our favourite and least favourite trends in comics. And look, there's been a lot of stuff that I kind of noted down a few of these when I was putting the notes together for the show, which was, you know, the things I've really enjoyed this year, like the return of the Marvel graphic novel. We've done absolutely. A few of them on the show, you know. The DC television universe, just getting it right with Arrow and planning out their expansion really well.
With The Flash coming soon.
Yeah. You know, creator, not editorial-led comics. Now, there's one company that is not following this, but I think almost every other company, be it Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, certainly the last two, are really giving their creators lots of rope.
Well, Marvel's got their entire line. They've got Icon, which is their entire creator.
But not even Icon. I'm talking about mainstream titles where they're just putting people... I mean, like we mentioned before, putting... Fraction and that team
and trusting them
and just saying just keep doing what you're doing, same as Daredevil.
Yep.
You know, just keeping that team together because they're doing a good job, rather than arbitrarily saying, right, it's September, let's change seats.
Yep. It's like in their movie universe when they go, let's put Joss Whedon on the Avengers.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, well, of course we're going to get good stuff.
So if we get some people who really like the characters or have an interesting idea about them and they're good writers and artists and we put those interesting ideas in, we might have something here.
Might actually have an idea.
So that's what I mean by that, and I think that's a really great trend what we're seeing in comics, like really creator and art-led comics as well. Original digital series. We mentioned Private Eye with one earlier tonight, and Batman 66, Injustice, all these original digital series. And I think really...
Smallville season 11,
all those kind of series that are... And not to mention, you know, things like Thrillbent and, you know, all those kind of things that are out there.
And Marvel expanding their events by putting out digital-only... spin-offs, and the Infinite Comics, they're calling them.
Infinite Comics, the whole Comixology Submits movement. People who are able to put their own comics out online, you know? I mentioned Homebrew Vampire Bullets before as an Australian thing, and Gestalt certainly put a lot of their stuff out digitally first. You know, these are not digital exclusives, but the fact that these digital exclusives are paving the way for more digital exclusives so that we, you know, the whole... medium of comics is shifting into something that's more convenient and easier to use. I mean, David, you catch the train every day to work.
I don't want to have to carry a pile of comics with me.
Exactly right. So that's real changing thing. And something, this is, David, you want to talk about this one, the whole idea. You mentioned it on the show before.
I did. I mentioned it on last week's show as well, where I talked about one of the things I absolutely loved, the current trend in comics, is taking characters who are established characters but possibly have finished any sort of major popularity or whatever the case might be, giving them another spin and putting a different spin on them and allowing them to try something completely unusual with them, which often ends itself in a really humorous comic book. Examples of this are Hawkeye, our winner from earlier on, Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Now, I hate Superior Spider-Man as it stands right now. I'm not enjoying it.
That's kind of an example of the antithesis of what you're saying. Well,
absolutely. But Superior Foes of Spider-Man is hysterical. It is like Ocean's 11 gone wrong with the Sinister Six.
Avengers AI is another great example.
Avengers AI is a great one. And now we just had issue one of Harley Quinn, which is another spin on this again. So we're seeing a really nice trend where they go, you know what? We can have fun. And I like that. I like that.
Because goddammit, I want comics to be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can be serious, but they don't all be serious because we are not the core audience. There is a big breadth of people.
Let's not forget that in the heyday of Spider-Man, when we were talking about mid-1980s Spider-Man, even early 80s Spider-Man, he was dealing with difficult topics. He was dealing with serious subject matter, but he always had a joke. And it was always a really fun book to read, even if somebody had died or if there was something, you know, horrible going on in the city, Spider-Man always had a quip.
Yeah.
We don't get that anymore. You know, we just, it's very rare.
There's actually a book I'm reading at the moment. I think I mentioned it last week's show, Black Science, with one character the whole way. They're facing, people are getting stabbed, they're facing a thing, and he keeps throwing out these really bad jokes the whole way. And they said, why do you keep coming up with these? He goes, when else would I do it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the best attitude for comics like this to have.
Absolutely.
Now, this is a positive night, but there are some things that have annoyed us this year. Some of our least favorite trends in comics. I don't like people named Trent in comics, frankly. If you name Trent and you're in comics, you shouldn't be there.
We should remind the audience that we are recording quite late at night. It is the new year, people.
Superior Spider Trent.
We're still drunk from Christmas. We should say that we mentioned the crossovers that beget more events. That is a trend that is not new to this year, but it's been probably out in more force this year than I've noticed it in a long time.
We're seeing a severe case of Marvelitis.
Yeah.
We really are. I mean, this...
Well, both of the majors are doing
well,
this.
Well, yeah, but Marvel was our starting point to this, and it was that syndrome, which we talked heavily about at the beginning of the year, especially after the AVX series.
Yeah, that really kicked it off.
Yeah, where we basically said, Fear Itself, I think, was the one that really
We've been in a perpetual state of events
since then. And basically, it's this idea that we have a huge event. It doesn't end, it just leads to another huge event. And you kind of start to get a little bit of
fatigue.
Fatigue, yeah, that's the perfect word for it. Fatigue on this, because you sit there and go, I want my event to end. Because that's why it's called an event.
I think I said this before, this is why I like the rise of the graphic novel. Because for those people who just want to dip in and dip out, it's kind of like they've seen the movie, I just want to go in and grab something that I can read a little bit more, find out a little bit more. But that's why I like, not all of them were great, but that's why I like the idea of those season one graphic novels they brought out. It's like, you know, I don't know a lot about Ant-Man, so I'm going to get this book. You know, I don't know a lot about Doctor Strange, I just want to pick this one up, and just so I've got somewhere to start. I don't want to have to come in burdened with 40 years worth of history. And even with the reboots and the relaunches, you're still coming in with, you know, 40 events worth of history, you know, so it is difficult to...
When you think about it, when you go back to Civil War, I mean, Dave and I are both huge fans of Civil War, and you go back to Civil War and you think, yes, it was an enormous event. It was, with all tie-ins and everything, it's like 170-something issues. It's an enormous thing. It changed the Marvel Universe. Mm. But there was then a gap. Yes, there was Secret Invasion, which was a smaller event.
Just on that quickly, I think I've cracked why Civil War is the best Marvel event. It's because it doesn't take place in like 2-3 hours. You know, Civil War is like a month long, like
it takes place over
a long period of time,
and the repercussions of it are felt throughout the entire Marvel universe for 2 years, until Siege came along,
like that actually
and cleared it up.
That actually played out like in real time, essentially, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Whereas you look at Forever Evil and like Trinity War, like these things are what theoretically happening over 3 hours
or days sometimes,
days?
But like not very long periods of time. I mean, it's hard to tell in Forever Evil how long the status quo has been there for. And I think that's one of the problems I'm having with it, because some of the titles, you'd think other books would be impacted by this when the sun has been shifted out of its orbit. You know, the moon is...
Well, I mean, Batman did it very conveniently by saying, oh, for a while this is all running on, we'll do 0 year.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just backed itself out so that it doesn't have to deal with
and,
it.
And
sorry to derail you, Dave.
No, please.
And Green Lantern, which is still a strong book, doesn't have to deal with it because it's off in space.
Yeah.
So, you know...
But during all of this Forever Evil that's going on, let's not forget the World's Finest has continued on, and Power Girl and Huntress don't seem to be affected by any of this at all.
Well, that was like in Infinity, whereas like Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, like characters you'd expect to be like pivotal in a cosmic universe, were nowhere to be seen.
Just quickly, because I don't want to dwell on the negative too much, but just some of the other things that I wrote down, things like, you know, digital being the same price as print annoys me in a lot of cases, even though there's a lot of digital sales. I think the way, given what I said before about digital being the way forward, I think that there is a lot of scope for reducing the price of digital so that, you know, it'll encourage more people to adopt that format.
I would imagine there's a lot with the distributors saying you can't kill our print market with that. So,
exactly. No, I would imagine that would be it as well. And as future potential retailers, I'm probably going to be arguing the complete opposite in a few months' time. Banning of sexually explicit content on specific devices. Now, this is a big bugbear for me. Now, I know the various gatekeepers have their policies, whether it's on an iOS device, a Kindle, you know, Comixology, whoever is the gatekeeper has their own policies regarding sexual explicit content. In a digital environment, once when your gatekeeper is a private interest with terms and conditions rather than laws governing them, then you have digital gatekeepers. You no longer have freedom of distribution, and people are missing out entirely on some terrific comics because someone's a bit prudish in the higher ups of that particular office.
And I agree. I think censorship of any kind is a very thorny
subject. It goes beyond censorship to me.
But yeah, the problem we have here is...
Yeah, I agree with you, Richard, actually, especially in this year's case. Sorry, Dave, just really briefly, like, you look at Saga. There is so much graphic content across the board in Image titles alone. You know, whereas, like, the only one these people seem to be reading is Saga because it's popular. And, of course, Saga gets... It gets treated as... Like, the example.
Yeah.
That's sort of the problem here. It's
why
aren't we working out what the whole censorship issue is?
It happened to Saga, and it happened to Sex Criminals.
Of course. But Sex Criminals is an obvious one. Oh, the title's Sex.
Oh, and it happened to Sex. But the thing is, those Sex Criminals and Saga are two that dealt with fairly frank depictions of sex, where there are really kind of hyper-sexualized violence happening in other comic books where no one bats an eyelid. Mm. Because it's hyper-realistic.
Mm.
And, you know, no one bats an eyelid at somebody getting gunned down with, 50 machine guns or something, or being, you know, beaten to having their head taken off with a meat cleaver or something.
This has been the argument with film and television for
years. Exactly, but the thing is, comics are being seen as in a particular box, and I think that's the problem. Comics are seen as this little thing. It's the whole Archie and Veronica Blush thing that we always play. You know, as long as the mainstream sees comics as Archie and Veronica, we're going to keep getting this problem. But we're also going to keep getting this problem because a third party, not the publisher, not the reader, but a third party, being in this case the digital gatekeeper,
has set the standards. And in many ways, not even the actual distributor, not even the actual app that is wants to censor it.
No, in the case
it's
of
because
comics,
of the platform it's sitting on, and that's a problem.
Yes, in the case of the initial banning of Sex, or maybe it was Saga. In the case of the initial banning of Saga, it was the platform that banned it, and not Comixology in that particular case. And it was actually Comixology came out, and Comixology did the deed, but they said it was their misinterpretation of the platform's policies. But the fact that they had to think twice over the platform's policies is my problem.
And this is where we still have a little ways to go with this digital distribution, because we are digitally distributing on tablets, predominantly, and those tablets, whether it be Samsung or Apple or what have you, each one of their stores, they control what is on that tablet. Whereas on a PC, for instance, you can install anything you want because you can get it from anywhere you want. So on a PC, you can throw a CBR down there or a CBZ, and you can read whatever you want. There's nothing to stop you. Whereas on a tablet, we only have our certain sources to get that stuff through.
That's right.
And that's the, we have a little ways to go until basically we have a freedom of the apps, basically. But we'll see what happens. Arbitrary editorial changes.
I just quickly mentioned that because I'm not going to do any more ragging on DC, but we all know the major stories that have been happening there. Batwoman being the,
that's a great example,
of it, but, it's been weird. It's been a weird year for that over at DC, and we don't know what's going on.
Well, I guess
there.
Like the whole covers stuff fits into that, doesn't it? Like
the free
covers and all that stuff, Villains Month. And
yeah, that's right. That was the other thing you mentioned, and I forgot to put it in the notes, which was the, those really.
It just speaks to me.
52 alternate covers.
Yeah. It just speaks to me the bigger problem. It's like it's almost the mentality that the comics are sold solely on what the cover is, what they're selling. Whereas it's like, well, they're telling stories in there too, you know, that we might enjoy. Let's maybe focus on doing...
Do you remember when the covers actually accurately reflected what was inside the book? I remember those days.
The Villains Month covers were notorious for this, because none of them actually happened in the story.
Yeah.
I remember chatting with, I want to say it was Tristan Jones on Twitter, when the 52 covers came out for Justice League of America. And that was last year, I think, though,
first
one came out. But the Villains Month covers is a thing. But I remember talking, and he does a lot of variant covers. It's one of his big stocks in trade. And he was saying, well, look, it's my bread and butter. It's, you know, so I can't rag too much on variant covers. But he said this 52 covers, we all agreed, everyone sort of agreed that was ridiculous because it was the same cover with a different flag.
Mm.
And the assumption was that real fans would go out and buy all 52 covers. And I think that's what annoys me about it. It's the expectation that
we're
dedicated fans.
They'll buy it no matter what the quality is.
I've recently noticed this trend where they go, it's got variant covers, and when you look at the variant covers, they're literally just coloured slightly differently.
Yeah.
You go, that's not a variant cover.
Or that's just the pre-inking.
Yeah, exactly.
Although in the strictest sense of the word it is, because you know, like if you take it to other collecting models like stamps, you know, sometimes...
No, of course, but I'm talking about from an artistic point of
view. I love variant covers, though.
I will buy, like if I'm collecting a thing, I will buy all the variant covers if I'm a big collector for that. I certainly get the variant covers for Green Arrow.
Yeah.
But you know, half the time it's just a black and white variant. Mm. But at the moment, because of Sorrentino's art, that's cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we're not collectors in the sense that, oh, we have to have this variant because it's a 1 in 25, or we have to have this one because it's rarer than the normal cover, and we're going to make some money off this in 10 years. We want the variant because it's just cool artwork.
When they did, it's
a sentimental kind of
thing. They did like 20 variant covers for the first Guardians issue, and then like the fifth one as well with Angela. But the artists they got on that, man, they were amazing.
And they were great variants, Red Sonja from Dynamite.
And let's not mention like...
Wonderful, all female artists.
It was like six or seven variants, and they were like, fabulous.
You had people like...
Connor.
Amanda Connor and Nicola Scott.
I want Scotty Young to have a career, so...
Yeah, exactly.
And Scotty Young covers are great. Or the Lego covers. This is the Lego covers I want to see. You know what I mean? Where you're doing something different with it. Not just colouring it.
Yeah, that's exactly the
But then you get ones like this month, they did a whole lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. covers, and it was just like different photos of different people from S.H.I.E.L.D. on completely unrelated books.
Yeah.
Like there'd be Guardians of the Galaxy, and there'd be a picture of the robot guy. You know, what's his name? Not Coulson. The other one, you know?
the one we could never remember.
Coulson 2.0.
Let's get away from the negative for a while. Yeah. Let's talk about our favorite comic book adaptations while we're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'll just do a quick rundown of the stuff that's come out this year. There's been Walking Dead Season 4, Arrow Season 2, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Thor the Dark World, Man of Steel, Iron Man 3, Red 2, R.I.P.D., Batman the Dark Knight Returns Part 2, Justice League the Flashpoint Paradox, Kick-Ass 2, Kick-Ass 2, Superman Unbound, The Wolverine, and Blue is the Warmest Color.
That's a lot of adaptations this year.
Comic book movies are dead, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not making a cent.
Yeah.
Look, I'm gonna throw this out there and say I think you need to break it down into two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to look at it from cinema and from television point of views. And I think Richard's right on the same page as me when I say I think that Arrow is just consistent. Halfway through the season, hasn't missed a step. It's picking up fans. It's just a great show. It's how you do superhero television.
I would 100% agree with that. I think that it's probably, despite the fact that I am actually a massive Green Arrow fan, obviously, I think that it's doing more for the DC cinema or the DC live action universe than Man of Steel has.
Absolutely.
Or any other of their major events have done.
How are you? You're probably the Walking Dead.
I'm going to go the Dark World.
Oh, the Dark World. Oh, the cinematic universe.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, in terms of TV, I'd probably go the Walking Dead just because I haven't seen Arrow Season 2 yet.
Yeah.
And I think we're all on the same page for cinema.
But I'm pretty sure that once I have watched Arrow Season 2, based on what you guys have told me, it does sound like the real deal.
And we've only got half a season yet, but it's been an amazing
especially
season.
What you guys told me about the season finale.
Mid-season finale. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, if I had to pick one film, Thor the Dark World, and for the very reasons we said on the show, which were that it is the best interpretation, the best delivery of a comic as a comic to the cinema.
This had an aerial battle in Asgard.
Yeah. It had a Star Wars moment. It introduced the cosmic universe.
The world tree.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, this is also the movie that actually has a monologue where someone says, before the universe, there was darkness, and before the darkness, there were elves. and so, a movie that is going to have the balls to do that is straight up legit, in my opinion.
No, I thought it was fantastic.
Just to bring the mood down a little bit, we just wanted to pay a bit of tribute to some of the people who have left us this year. Some really, really, really amazing artists, creators, and other driving forces in the comic book world. So, nothing more appropriate than
nice choice.
We've got people early this year. Robert Morales left us. Some of you might remember. This is a book I actually read way back in the early 2000s when it came out. Truth, Red, White and Black, which was about one of the African-American soldiers who was part of the Super Soldier program. And it was kind of like they were saying that happened before. They tested it on a white guy. Those kind of things. So it was just That's a really awesome. Interesting yeah. Thing. Really, really tragic news for the comics community earlier this year was the death of Kim Thompson, who was the Fantagraphics publisher and editor. Now, if you know Fantagraphics, they put out some amazing things, everything from like Chris Ware's building stories to the reprints of like the Peanuts stuff and, you know, just a plethora of books. So that was a major thing. Supergirl co-creator Al Plastino passed away. Carmine Infantino, who did... Amazing, huge at DC. Very long list. I think co-created...
He designed The Flash, didn't he?
Designed The Flash, the modern Flash, as well as the original Black Canary.
Yeah.
So massive, massive. To use Kevin Smith's term, huge bucket of wind.
Yeah.
Nick Carty, who is... I did a little tribute to him on the side a little while ago. Probably one of the best cover artists, full stop. Best known for Teen Titans... and a lot of DC work. Also did a whole series of these like romantic teen romance covers, which are great. They're just these really melodramatic covers, like so amazing. Bill Keen, who did the Family Circus. Remember the Family Circus?
I remember the Family Circus. Yeah.
And also there's a few others that could be mentioned, but I thought I couldn't go without mentioning Michael Ansara, who, if you remember the Batman animated series, he was the voice. Of Mr. Freeze.
And he was awesome.
He was phenomenal. Because that was one of the first episodes, I think, had Mr. Freeze in it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
He was heartbreaking, is what he was.
Yeah, so a big, big behind-the-panel salute to all of those people who have left us this year. And everybody else who has that we didn't have time to mention here today. But if you've contributed to comics in some way, you've contributed to our livelihood.
We should also mention, wasn't it Kubert? Andy Kubert?
Or was
it Joe Kubert?
I can't remember which Kubert, so I'm just going to leave that for the moment.
apologies.
Sorry, Kuberts, if we've forgotten which one of you we needed to pay tribute to. it's time we get down to the business end of things, and this is our special awards category for the year. Now, these are kind of ones where we haven't so much had a list of nominees as a definitive winner. The first one is the Cover Story Best Cover Artist of the Year, brought to you by my regular column, Cover Story, on behindthepanels.net. This was impossible for me to choose one person because I have looked at literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of covers this year, and all the ones I picked, I pick about 20 a month, and they're all great.
Yeah.
So I decided to pick an artist rather than an individual cover. I've gone with Francesco Francavilla because he's done amazing covers for... Afterlife with Archie, Black Beetle, Guardians of the Galaxy, to name a few. But also variant covers for all sorts of things. Just amazing retro-inspired art. Mm-hmm. When he's not doing that, he's doing things like Batman 72, creating his own 1970s version of Batman where they're all like...
Yeah, they're so awesome if you haven't seen
70s
them.
Cops. Yeah. So he's just an awesome artist, full stop. But, you know, people like Adam Hughes have done amazing covers this year. Phil Noto, Mike Del Mondo... It's done amazing covers on pretty much everything.
Staples covers for Saga.
The Fiona Staples covers for Saga.
The Revival ones we should mention.
That's, I think, Frizon, I think
I
her
think
name
so,
is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jenny Frizon, yeah, does amazing covers. So all those people and many, many more that I have forgotten.
I just want to give a shout out quickly to Charlie Adlard's Walking Dead covers, which I always love.
And Charlie Adlard should deserve special mention because he has been doing Walking Dead since issue 6 or something. Mm. Yep. Just consistently, so 115 issues or something.
Yeah, he's had a hard, he's a long slog there.
Yeah, so amazing, amazing stuff. Time for our first Legend of the Year award, which is, and we had to give it this year to Chris Claremont, because we've interviewed this legend of comics not once but twice,
and he was absolutely giving both times. He just gave it all up.
And Chris, congratulations for the award.
Hello, this is Chris Claremont speaking to you from behind the panels. Hope you enjoy the listen and hope you enjoy the books you're reading.
And what do you think about the award?
I love that man.
He was great. He was terrific. We got the honor of actually meeting him in person at Supernova. and in a weird thing where I was sandwiched between Chris Claremont and George Perez with a microphone and guests kept coming up. It was weird. Another person we met at that very same Supernova is our winner of the Dead Set Legend of the Year, which is our Australian Legend of the Year. And, you know, one day in the future, I dream that we'll combine these together. Mm. But we had to make special mention of Tom Taylor, because Tom Taylor has, as we said, carved out two very distinct sandboxes, in addition to bringing us The Deep, in addition to bringing us all sorts of...
And a whole bunch of Star Wars books.
And a whole bunch of Star Wars
as
books,
as he would actually put it. Yeah. A whole mess of Star Wars books.
Tom Taylor, you're our first Dead Set Legend of the Year.
This is Tom Taylor. I'm the writer of Injustice, Piles of Star Wars Books, and The Deep, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
That's the one.
Piles.
Piles of Star Wars Books.
I gotta say, probably the friendliest man in the world.
Oh, and just...
Besides me, of course.
He's friendlier than me.
Now, finally, we have a kick-ass pick of the week every week. So if we're not taking a break, we have about 40 of those a year. But we all have our favourites that we do. And each one we do is either a favourite pick at the time, or it's a favourite pick. It's a classic pick that we thought we had to read or we should read. So it's time for the kick-ass pick of the year.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the
year.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Black. So basically, this is everything. If you're looking at our list of shows that we've done this year, it's everything that starts from issue 45, Ant-Man Season 1, all the way through to issue 83, which was the Father Christmas special last week. Now, I'll go first. My favourite this year, without a doubt, has to be Black Sad, Somewhere Within the Shadows. I adored this book when I read it, because I'd been meaning to read it for years, and just immediately went on and read the other three volumes afterwards. I love the artwork in it. I love the hard-boiled story. I love the Americana of it, and I love that they're all animals, and it doesn't matter, and I love that they're foul-mouthed, you know, really human characters that just happen to look like animals.
It was a good book. It was really good.
It blew me away. I was not prepared to like it that much. David, and I know your pick moved me a lot too, and it was absolutely very, very close.
In
to
fact, I think
one.
with my pick, we actually did declare it.
This is Comics 101.
And that was Marvel's, because it was the book that Beach reminded you why you loved superhero books. Mm. It was an absolute love letter to superheroes, the Marvel Universe. It had the amazing, amazing artwork of Alex Ross. It's just all the way through it. It just fills you with this sense of awe again. It was a terrific book. And I'm so glad we actually covered that book.
And Dave, you picked one that's slightly newer, but it was one you brought to us and we all thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, it was Spider Island.
Yes!
And we never released that show, did we?
No!
That show is recorded. It will one day come out. Yeah.
You hear that, Mike?
It's there with the abandoned pilot of GMC. Right. But I have some words to say about Delta Goodrum.
That'll be. That's right. You do. Yeah. That'll be when one of us dies. That'll be leaked. Yeah.
They'll study it. I currently have it as an encrypted file.
David's got a lot of dirt on it.
Someone will get it out, Dave. Yeah. It'll be academic treasure 100 years from now.
What was it really, Dave?
It was really actually Revival.
Revival.
Or Revivalus, as it said before.
That's the Mexican counterpart. Revivalus. It was just black and white photocopies of Revival. One staple in the top left corner.
Property of the public library.
You can just imagine that the dialogue bubbles are just masking tape.
So basically what we're saying is, if you only read three comics this year, make sure that they were Black Sad, Marvels, and Revival.
I agree.
There you go.
And keep reading Saga. Keep watching the Saga.
Keep watching the Saga. Keep watching the Brian K. Vaughan. We're going to thank you for joining us for this often chaotic but incredibly fun first attempt at an award show.
And we will hone our skills on this.
No, I hope they get worse.
Yeah. No, we'll get James Franco to host it.
Guys, this is the final episode of Behind the Panels for 2013. As we said last week, thank you all so much for giving us your love and undivided attention, even if you do skip through the bits sometimes. thank you for the ratings, the comments, the love, the listening, the increased telling people about us, because obviously our listenership's gone up. Just, you know, and thank you guys too for being adequate co-hosts.
And thank you, Richard, for being our fearless leader throughout this year.
Thank you. I don't know about fearless. I'm a little daredevil man with that too. But
look, I just want to say to everybody who's out there listening, I just want to say have a really, really, really happy new year.
Have a happy, safe new
year. And safe. What are you doing? Have a safe and happy new year. Don't drink too much. Have fun, but don't drink too much. And we'll see you in 2014.
Damn straight.
In a couple of weeks, in fact.
Don't be a phantom stranger now.
Oh, David.
I just opened that Pandora box.
Oh!
This is going to be going on forever, Evil.
Oh, I'm going to have to dial H to get out.
I feel like we've been here for infinity. Let's get out of here.
Well, until next year... I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm David Longo.
And this has been the first annual, and maybe the last annual,
probably the last
Behind the Panels Awards Ceremony. See you next year.